You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. Happy 2021. It's our first podcast of the year. I'm joined by Jamie for some real tennis chat because there are real matches. Jamie, good morning. Happy New Year.
Good morning. Happy New Year. How are you?
I'm good. It's strange to wake up in the morning and actually have match results come flitting across your screen along with your Georgia election results. We're talking on Wednesday morning, and already the women are at play in Abu Dhabi. The men are qualifying in Delray, and even never mind COVID. It's just nice to have tennis back. It's been a while since we've been in a position to actually talk about some tennis and not just guessing games about the calendar or trying to find other ways to fill time as we wait for tennis to return. So good to see the sport back with us. I thought we would do a few things today. One of them is we talked with Sam Querrey the other day. He told us why he made his escape from Russia, and that seems to have generated a fair amount of attention, pro and con. Maybe we can talk about that. And then we did a column projecting 2021, and someone suggested we actually, instead of just answering, why don't we provide some logic and some reason and talk through some of the choices we made in terms of prognosticating 2021. So I thought you and I would do that this morning. How does that sound?
Sounds good. I will say the Sam Querrey interview, as you said, got quite a lot of responses. I think for a while we didn't hear anything from him at all. And of course the ATP investigation concluded and the suspended fine came down. And so I think a lot of people were really interested to hear his side of the story, though I think people are still very much divided on where they stand.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, remember when this news first broke in October, this was a few days after the 2020 French Open, the ATP had a very strongly worded statement. And there was even, I had people that were deep inside these discussions inside tennis say, look, Sam Querrey may have played his last match. This is a serious breach. This could be, a 6-month suspension, even a 1-year suspension. Sam Querrey already in his mid-30s. This could have sealed his career. And it turned out that is not the case at all. And this is he got a suspended $20,000 fine, which basically means he only needs to behave himself with respect to COVID. I mean, this isn't if he gets in a dispute with a chair umpire, that doesn't count. This is only health and safety related. So essentially this was a slap on the wrist. And I think this divided people. And I give Sam a lot of credit for essentially saying, look, the facts aren't really in dispute. It's just a question of interpretation. And here's what I went through, and put yourself in my shoes. And if you disagree with me disagree, and some people took great offense and still do about what he did. Other people sympathize, but he basically said, here's the story. It's not really not much is in dispute factually. In a lot of these cases, you wouldn't necessarily extend this platform to an athlete without trying to find some balance from the other side. But I think it's not really a question of facts being in dispute. It's just a question of application of law and how severely you want to sanction him. So Sam laid out what happened and sort of gave us a TikTok and essentially said, here are the facts. Now go ahead and judge me armed with all the facts. And as you say, Jamie, some people still take offense to this, his leaving a country, going to another country, breaching protocol. A lot of people essentially said, look, you run the risk and you knew what you were signing up for. And I think other people saw, as you alluded to, he was in a fairly desperate situation in a foreign country with COVID tests and not a lot of clarity in terms of how the next few weeks would shake out with a 7-month-old in tow. Candidly, I tend to land there as well. Not an ideal set of circumstances, and you wish there had been another option and a little more communication in there, but I don't think you can really fault someone for being in Russia, not getting a straight answer, having COVID tests, having the possibility of being separated from your wife and 7-month-old, and basically saying, I'm going to do this as safely as I can, but I got to get the hell out of here. Consequences be damned. So I don't know if there were other things that struck you reading his piece, but I have a hard time dredging up a whole lot of outrage, honestly.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot of people say, and we sort of talked about this briefly on the podcast before this, that, why bring your family in the first place, right? It's a pandemic, you're going to a different country, you have an infant. There's a lot of reasons there. And I know in his chat with you, he basically said, it's going to be a long time. I was away from my family and he wasn't prepared or ready to be gone for that long, which is fine. But I think one of the biggest things that struck me as he sort of, as you say, TikTok through what he had gone through and how the events transpired, one of the things, the point to me and what really makes this a story is when he gets the call from, one of the ATP supervisors and just says, you guys are no longer welcome at the hotel. And to me, it's just curious as to why they were not going to be allowed anymore. Because I think, he makes a point saying, there was a plan in place that if we were to test positive, this is what we had to do. We had to, and they started to, he says they were bringing in, to go take out boxes of food and they were putting sheets outside the door. And, I think everyone, has someone they know, or at least a story they've heard about someone who had to quarantine in a hotel or something like that over the past few months. So I think that was like a very understandable situation. And so that to me is the sort of the turning point. And it's interesting as to why all of a sudden things flipped. And from there, I think it's relatable and a little understandable that when he was put in that situation, he was acting less as a tennis player following the rules that he was, that he had agreed to, and more just as a, person in a foreign place dealing with COVID, which is still relatively unknown to all of us, and then, made the decision to get out of there. But yeah, it's interesting. And as you say, I'm not finding myself enraged, but I can understand why people are frustrated, because we've also talked a lot about the Adria Tour and the Zarevs. And so I think there's a lot that history, I guess, of ATP players and just their irresponsible behavior in terms of COVID kind of leaves a bad taste. And then when something like this happens, I think it's hard not to connect the two.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there's a context here that has led to some backlash. I thought it was interesting that apparently you can take a private plane to the UK, or at least you could in October, and they were letting people in without checking their COVID status. But I think a lot of us can relate to this. We acknowledge this is unprecedented. We acknowledge that for all the policies in place a year ago, nobody thought we would be here. But inconsistency with respect to COVID protocol is really frustrating and erodes a certain trust in institutions. And I think a lot of us go through this. There's going to be school, there's not going to be school, you need a rapid test, no, it's got to be a PCR test. And I think it's easy to put yourself in the position of an athlete an ocean away from home and not getting a straight answer. And as you say, why was he suddenly evicted from his hotel after being told he would be required to stay there 2 weeks, which seemed to me would have been the obvious solution. It would have saved him money. It would have saved this whole situation. It's unclear why he would have been evicted from the hotel. But I feel like when someone's not being given consistent answers, especially in this situation, especially anyone who's been through this, you have a 7-month-old in tow, I think you look at this fact pattern. And again, it's not ideal. It's not to say that we should make everything situational, but it does seem like it's hard for me anyway to, again, generate much outrage. And I think you're right too. It's hard to it's hard to sort of see this as being of a piece with having a super spreader event as Djokovic did, or Zverev playing a match with COVID-like symptoms when every indication, every bit of information the players had been given said, don't do this. So anyway, I think Sam Querrey plays on. He'll be in Delray this week. And we will, you know, presumably put this behind us, because I cannot imagine he will run afoul of COVID protocol again for 6 months, which is what he's tasked with doing. So let's run through these in the little time we have. Again, we did sort of a quiz style, and this was a ripoff from Nicholas Kristof, so all credit to him of the New York Times. But we spun forward 2021, and we had a reader say, you know, I read your answers, but give me the logic behind them. So let's do that. Let's indulge that. The first question we addressed was, how many majors would be staged in 2021? One, two, three, or four? I said four. What do you say?
Yeah, listen, I've obviously read this, edited it, gone through. I agree with a lot of your answers, but I will spice it up a bit and change some of my, just so we have some differing opinions here. I'll go ahead and say three, just to say that maybe something happens. Of course, we know that Wimbledon has some sort of insurance, and that was the one missing from the calendar last year. So who knows what happens? There are spiking cases, new strains. We hope it's four, but just for some differing answers, I'll say three.
I think you're right. If we don't have one, Wimbledon is likely it. I don't believe Wimbledon still has that insurance. I think that paid out, and there was not a renewed policy by the insurer. But I think you're right that if we're not going to have one event, you know, Australia, everyone's getting on planes in a few days, and the French and the U.S. Open have already proven they can pull off one of these. I think you're right. If there isn't going to be a major in 2021, I suspect you're right, it'll be Wimbledon. Let's hope that's not the case. But that led to how many majors staged in 2021 will be done so at their usual time, their appointed time, and in front of the usual complement of fans?
This was a better phrased question, in my opinion.
Sort of a lead-in. we know Australia already will not have a full complement. So zero, one, two, or three, what do you say?
Zero, yeah. I think this question was more my cup of tea. The first one was a little too vague for me. But I think this makes a lot of sense. I think the timing is going to be different. The calendar is, you know, already shuffled slightly. And with Indian Wells being canceled, I don't think we're going to see the typical tennis calendar in a long time, definitely not in 2021.
I also think the attendance is a big part of this. And, right, you know, you keep hearing the same thing, at least in New York. What do we keep hearing? The last two things to snap back are going to be Broadway / performing arts and sports. And again, I mean, we hope Pfizer and Moderna and AstraZeneca do their thing, and that public health officials accelerate this vaccine distribution. But it's just right now, it's really hard to imagine. I mean, you look at, I don't know if you have this too, but yeah, you watch a replay, for example, of the, you know, Nadal Medvedev 2019 U.S. Open final, and you say, what are all those people doing without masks so close to each other? I mean, right now, the notion of 25,000 people piling into one venue, Some of them in suites, indoors, in close quarters. I mean, it's just right
screaming,
now that seems
yelling.
Like crazy world. Yeah, exactly. Mouths wide open.
I don't know. The COVID anxiety, looking back on things, looking back at photos, perhaps where you've been, and you know, even thinking about, you know, situations for regular people beyond, you know, sporting events and things. I think there's a lot of that there. So yes, the fans and that part of the majors, I don't think we're going to see get back to normal for a long time.
I don't know if you have the same experience. To me, it's like watching old sports where you say, you know, how did their short shorts were so tight, or oh my God, look, I can't believe they let me out of the house with that haircut, or they're playing with wooden rackets. How do they have so much power? That's the same feeling I have watching, as you say, fans shoulder to shoulder with their mouths wide open. You sort of cringe when you see that. Then you say, oh wait, that was only, you know, that was only 18 months ago. I'll paraphrase this one. Is a ATP player going to win his first major in 2021? And if so, whom?
Yeah. Let's go ahead and say yes. I know you chose Andrei Rublev. I'll go ahead and give a nod to Stefanos Tsitsipas here and say that maybe he gets his first major title in 2021.
I feel like every time we have this discussion with the men, at least, you sort of the instinct is, yeah, of course, there are four of these things, and there's a lot of young talent, and then you just kind of go through the calendar, and you sort of say, well, which one? You know, Djokovic has quietly become to Melbourne what Roger Federer is to Wimbledon. I mean, he's just owned that place over the last decade and a half. Nadal. Nadal in France. Now we're down to two, and suddenly, you know, best of five at Wimbledon on grass. Tricky to figure out somebody who's going to get through all three of the big three. And now we're down to the U.S. Open. So you're right. I said Rublev. If you were going to pick Tsitsipas, which you did, which event would you pick?
Yeah, I mean, he's what made. I think the only two majors that he's gone far in are the Australian Open and the French Open, and you just took those off the table. So one thing I will say is that I think, you know, what we saw happen at the U.S. Open, for example, with something, of course, just completely crazy happening with Djokovic, you know, unprecedented. No one would have thought that. But I think injuries or just everything with the calendar and COVID, I think there are a lot of ways for a player to suddenly have the doors opened in terms of these big stars not being available, not being there, not being, you know, a challenger for some of these majors due to circumstances that are not just wins and losses. So that's the only thing that I'm thinking of. I guess maybe we say US Open just for fun.
Resting it from Dominic Thiem, which is, of course, the U.S. Open, the last tournament where someone broke through and won a major for the first time. What about same for the women? Different set of circumstances, obviously. To me, the other big thing that we just still don't talk about enough is best of three versus best of five. Obviously, the women don't have that differential. WTA player to win her first major. Will there be one, and who will it be? Jamie.
Yeah, your list of choices here was interesting for me. I think if you look at the rankings, Svitolina, of course, is up there and the closest. I think for Madison Keys, it's been a rough go for the past year or so. And it with her getting so close a few years back, I don't think she's really gotten back to that point. So it's hard to say. And Sabalenka, of course, has been playing really well, still in the top 10. So the list here is good. I just think that we have seen so many players like Swiatek or others who have really come out of nowhere. And so I think that if a player who, you know, has not won a major is going to win in 2021. It might not come from this list. So I'm going to, I don't know if other, none of the above, one of those choices.
If you were going to name the highest ranked player who has not won a major, you're right. Oh, I was wrong. You're right. It is Svitolina. I thought it might have been Pliskova, but she's a few points behind. She's ranked 6 versus 5. After that, man, a lot of players on the women's side have won majors. We've forgotten even sort of the golden oldies and Azarenka and Mugu. I just don't see. There's so many players that are already on the board. Naomi Osaka and Halep and Serena. I mean, just go down the list.
Yeah, Kerber.
We forget about Andreescu. Yeah, even way down. I mean, even the Kerbers on the brink of retirement. Andreescu is now back playing this week or scheduled to at least. Boy, I don't know. I have a hard time seeing anyone breaking through. But you know, we would have said the same thing heading into the French Open, and look what that gave us. Okay, let's do a few more. Roger Federer's 2021 will look like what, and will it have the dreaded R word in it? What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Choice B here says to that he will struggle with that pesky knee, and that seems like it's been quite pesky these past few months. I know he's one to take it rather slow and be very smart with his schedule. So at first, before this most recent announcement about the Australian Open, I wasn't too concerned with his absence from the tour, basically, because he really, as we've talked about, really just had gotten to the point where he was tuning his schedule to really peak at the times that were best suited for him for Wimbledon and for the grass and just for that part of the year. But I'm a little concerned just because of the lengthy recovery and the fact that he had to have, you know, multiple procedures on the knee. So I think a big factor, and this is what you said, your choice, that he would go all out for Wimbledon, the Olympics, and the US Open. And so I think whether or not the Olympics occur and happen as planned in 2021, and whether or not he can, you know, get himself ready is going to be a big factor. I think the knee, I want to go with B, but the fact that retired this spring is part of that choice is making me a bit reluctant. I'm not sure that he will retire without sort of doing that last round that you mentioned, with the Laver Cup included in there.
I think the Laver Cup is a big factor here for a variety of reasons. Do note that the Laver Cup, at least as things stand now, is going to be held in the U.S. and in Boston, postponed from 2020. So we were talking about this in the mailbag this week. I'm not sure you play your last match in Boston, Massachusetts, after a 20-year unrivaled tennis career. The Olympics are an interesting factor as well. It's something that's meant a lot to Federer, and he is not, of course, won a singles gold. He does have a doubles gold with Stan Wawrinka and has the silver medal from London. But Federer, remember, wasn't able to play in Rio. I just got an email yesterday. This is the most over-budget Olympics is now the Tokyo Olympics, and it hasn't even been held yet. And we don't know how many fans they will accommodate. But I do think the Olympics will take place. I do wonder what that will do to the tennis schedule. I don't know. I mean, you know, Federer turns, of course, 40 years old on August 8th, and not so long ago, we would have giggled and laughed at the fact that we were even having a serious discussion about playing top-level tennis at age 40, but I think this is one of the happy trends in tennis, but as the cliche goes, Father Time is undefeated. I had an email, I had a text from an agent, maybe early fall, saying basically what's going on with Federer's knee. And I sort of said, I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't heard anything. Is there news? And he said, no, but it's just, you know, Federer usually minimizes injury and he comes back so quickly and he posts videos of training, which are sort of a nudge to the rest of the field. And he's working out in Dubai and we haven't seen any of that. I suspect this knee rehab isn't going quite as planned. And, It turned out that was reading the room. That was prescient. And, the guy takes exquisite care of his body. He plays a a game that, of course, is light and light on his feet, and he's had a very good track record overall with injuries through his career. But, you know, age 40 is age 40, speaking from experience. Speaking of age 40, speaking of people born in the second half of 1981 who will now turn 40, Serena Williams, thoughts on her 2021, Jamie?
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you on your choice here. I think if she wins her 24th major this year and she wins another one, I don't think anyone is going to be surprised. And I don't think she's going to retire just yet. But I think that, as we talked about with Federer, she has gotten very good at choosing her schedule. And I think she might be one of the players who this pandemic, this time off from tennis and time spent with her family, working on other parts of her life without needing to feel the pressure of playing tennis at the same time, actually might benefit her and extend her career. So I don't think the R word applies here. And I think you're right. I think she'll, pick her spots, play, and hopefully the injuries that sort of plagued her at the end of last year will have healed. And whether or not she wins a major, I think, really comes down to the surface and, a lot of factors. I mean, she's usually, when she gets to the end, it's really a battle against herself. So perhaps the time that she's had to kind of away from tennis maybe will help her overcome that. But I'm not seeing her retiring or, ending her career anytime soon. Definitely not in 2021.
The last major Serena won took place the same weekend of Donald Trump's inauguration in January of 2017. That was the Australian Open, of course, when she beat Venus. So it will be 4+ years. I feel like this is one of these functions in calculus where with sort of one of these step functions where every subsequent major, her chances go down. So I think her chances of winning a major in Australia are going to be her best chances for the year. And, I think if we know anything about Serena Williams, you don't underestimate her. She is capable of top tier tennis. She was capable of top tier tennis as recently as the US Open. But you feel like if it doesn't happen in Australia, the odds go down. And if it doesn't happen in France, and clay is always going to be your toughest surface, the odds go down. If it doesn't happen at Wimbledon. I don't know what her sort of, I don't know where her head is. And I don't know what the incentives are for her to retire. I mean, she basically plays whenever she wants and rests whenever she wants. And I think everybody realizes that's great. I don't think anyone has any issues with that. And as long as she's still competitive, I think you're right. I think for a variety of reasons, one of them just something as mundane as one young child versus four children of different ages. I think Serena probably outlasts Roger Federer, but I do sort of fear that with every major she fails to close, the step function goes down. Let me interrupt this. I just got an email, Jamie. Would you like some tennis news?
Breaking.
Minor tennis news. No, I wouldn't say breaking, but I do have some. I just got an email, some interesting quarantine information from the Australian Open. Apparently, the deadline for players, I'm reading this as I go, to nominate a team member to accompany them on site during the first week of quarantine. Players have to give their name, that individual, now. And some other quarantine protocol that I just received. There's a negative test. Players can leave their room for up to 5 hours to practice, but only one of their team members can accompany them. So imagine being the second team member and you've got a quarantine for 2 weeks and you're not even allowed to take that 5-hour break to go to the courts. That is a brave soul. Failure to comply with any of the rules listed may result in loss of prize money, disqualification, and an extension of quarantine, as well as deportation from Australia. So Australia is not messing around. And I think these quarantine rules basically say you're watching Netflix, you're, God forbid, reading a book, you're in your hotel room for 19 hours a day, for five of them you're at the court, and only at the court. And after 2 weeks, you're free to go. But it will be interesting to see what impact this has on players physically, what impact this has on their tennis, also what kind of impact this has emotionally, mentally. It cannot be fun and easy to be quarantined in a hotel with the only break going to 5 hours of parole to do push-ups and sit-ups and hit some tennis balls. But Australia ain't messing around, and these are quarantine protocols that players just received. All right, let's do one more before we call it. Let's do kind of our sweeping. I should read all these options, but sort of 2021, big picture. Where's this all headed? What do you see happening in 2021? Again, we'll link this column so people can see the four choices, but you have sweeping thoughts on tennis in 2021, Jamie.
Yeah, I mean, we can go through here, but I think you say the trend will happily continue in 2021. One of the things, the first one, players of all shapes and sizes will be accommodated. I think it's one of the best parts of tennis is not only shapes and sizes, but the international nature of the sport is one of my favorite parts. We talked about this, but I think the ATP and WTA will hopefully continue, as you say, to recognize that they are better together, and that operating as separate pieces at all times is probably not great. And I don't think we'll see a merger anytime in 2021, perhaps in the future. But I think the idea of you have Serena Williams on court at 6 o'clock and Roger Federer at 8 is one of the best parts of the sport as well. So hopefully tennis in 2021 will continue these trends.
Someone asked me this week what we would like to see from the pandemic, what we would like to see stick. I think we're all having this discussion in so many different contexts, right? Will ever go back to an office? Will outdoor dining stick around? Mm-hmm. We sort of said facetiously, if ball kids no longer have to fetch towels, then that's a good thing. But I think more seriously, if tennis can keep this spirit and some desperation and extraordinary times have caused this, but if tennis can keep this spirit of cooperation and open-mindedness and nimbleness, I think that will help going forward. And I think one of those, it's crazy. It's, as you say, it's not just that. I mean, I think you're totally right. It's not just so Serena Williams plays at 8 o'clock and Roger Federer follows her. It's that fans, they know both players. They have feelings about both players. There are very few people who say, I only like men's tennis, and I couldn't tell you who's that Polish teenager that won the French Open. There are very few people who say, I love Naomi Osaka, but who's that left-handed guy from Spain? Fans appreciate men and women. If not 50-50, there is knowledge and there's passion for both tours. And it's just, to me, it's so obvious that, as the cliche goes, one plus one equals three. And this is something that people have been saying since I started covering the sport many moons ago. But maybe this will be a year of reckoning with that. Anyway, all right. So a lot to look forward to. We will post this column. We will have a new guest next week. I want to quickly acknowledge some sad news, which is the passing of Bob Brett, a longtime coach of many, many players. He was someone who is always not just accessible, but always had something worthwhile to say. I always enjoyed talking to him and looking at the tributes from any number of people. A lot of people had the same experience. He passed away this week. Longtime Australian coach, marathoner, Bob Brett at age 67. RIP Bob Brett. We will have another podcast next week. We have results. We'll be able to talk about a women's event in the Middle East. We'll be able to talk about Delray. We'll be able to talk about Australian Open qualifying, real life tennis, and not just COVID and schedule talk. Stick around. We'll have a guest as well. You can download, leave a review, subscribe anywhere you get your podcast. As always, Jamie, it's a pleasure talking shop with you.
Thanks, John. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll do it again in 7 days.